Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel's
beating it! Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables with me and Russ Cortinel each and every week. Well over 100 shows, Rusty, now. Big week, though, my friend. Okay, big week, Rusty. You and I have tried to sit in on meetings, okay? So the way this works, folks, is we've got a partner, a friend of Rusty's who launched this whole thing, and then Russ invited me in, and off we went. He's a great guy, Bill. His company's called Global Traffic Network, Global Story Network. And so off we go, 100-plus shows, and often they will sit us down and go, we need to talk to you guys, need to meet with you guys about some technical stuff, okay? About hitting social media, do this, Jimmy, you do that. Rust, if you could tag this guy and hit this guy up, if you could share, like, okay, subscribe. Russ and I are like, not going to happen. So the big day is last week we hired a digital marketing company. Okay, that's the deal. Eddie Ackle, we're going to bring him on next week to talk about Eddie. He's got a huge job, Rusty, okay? Our numbers are very good. We appreciate everyone listening, but we got to grow them. We're going to grow them. So Russ and I both said, we can't help you. And so it's Elite Digital Marketing. And the website, Rusty, I just sent it to you. They launched a new website.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah, totally impressive. And what we thought we were going to do down the road is you know, if I get asked once, Russ, you probably do too. I get asked a million times, how do you make money doing a podcast? And most of it is you need listeners to, first of all, to do it. And so we thought we'll bring Eddie on and see what he can do with our amount of listeners over the next 3, 4, 5, or 6 months. And so off we went, thanks to Bill. And we're going to see what we can do.
And if you want to save Jim's job, tell your friends to listen, because this is your idea, not mine.
Anyway, Rusty, how was the week, pal? You're still, you didn't get kicked out of BC. Fires have been terrible.
No smoke on Vancouver Island, at least down here in Victoria. Big day Friday. My brother Bruce put together this Friday golf group, and he sends out an email Monday, Tuesday, who's in. And there's about 40 guys on the email. I've been playing every Friday since I got back, unless we're working on James Island. And every year they all have to put in $100 for the ace pot for a hole in one.
Yep.
And then whoever wins it usually throws a big party. So there's been, up until Friday, there was 3 winners, and one got anywhere from 4 to 16,000 was in the pot. And there was $5,600 Friday, and Darren McAdams, and I was playing with him on 14 at Victoria Golf Club, hit a 7-iron and got a beautiful ace. And so big party ensued after, which
of course, like you need a hole in one to have a party.
It was just a little longer and a little better than usual. So we were all having a great time. There was maybe about 6 of us. There was 20 guys total that day that played, and 6 of us left. And I made which was kind of a funny comment about wearing my mask from my seat 20 feet to the bathroom and back. And I sat down and I said, thank God I didn't give anybody COVID. Yeah. And it pissed my younger brother off. And we got into it. And
oh, no.
I called him an effing idiot. He called me an effing idiot. We love each other. He's not only my brother, he's one of my best friends. And
sure.
Was. And so it's getting heated. And the guys are like, come on, guys, go on.
No way.
And he's freaking tough, like really tough, tougher than Jeff. So I moved one seat over just so he couldn't throw me. But well, anyways, it was fine. We settled down and got over it pretty quick and continued to drink more wine and have fun. But it was for about 5 minutes. It was pretty good.
Yeah, right, nice. Eh? Family shit, right? It just doesn't fall under the same category as anything else, right? You know, if it was a stranger, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, don't worry about it. You know, have a good night, right? But I'm glad to hear that, because you're still talking about my brother who kicked the shit out of me about 8 years ago. And and I'm not lying, folks. You've heard it before. And then when you told me, holy Chris, sorry, Jimmy, I was a little testy the other night. You and I trade texts back and forth.
Yeah.
And you said, I was into it with my brother. Okay. Yeah. I got to admit, right? I went, yeah. I hope he belted you one right in the jaw.
Well, that's probably why I moved a chair away, because your brother suckered you. And Bruce was getting, I could see by his facial expressions, he was getting to that point where he was going to, I don't know. He hasn't hit me since he was a kid, but I've seen him hit people and it would hurt a lot. So
Always said he's the toughest of all of you.
Yeah. Right? Hands down.
Hard to believe, because he's not a very big guy.
Right? Well, one night we're in a bar, we're at the grill in our friend's bar restaurant in Victoria. And it was right after Jeff and I retired, and he had a buddy who was a little lippy from Vancouver come over, and Jeff was drinking then.
Yeah.
So we're all out having a good time. And then all of a sudden my brother, Jeff, and this Rob Mackey are outside with five bouncers, and Bruce and I go out there and they all got the walkie talkie, you know, earpieces.
Oh, sure.
And they're one guy is lipping off to Jeff. Oh yeah. Rich hockey player, big tough guy. And you know, and his buddy's chirping like a little yappy dog, like F you guys. And Bruce is not saying a word. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the middle going, guys, Jeff has post-concussion syndrome. We can't have a fight. He could freaking die if somebody hits him.
Right.
You guys need to stop. We know the owner. Oh yeah. You guys are, you know, the owner. And they're really being lip. They're trying to get a fight going.
Right.
And I'm like, no, we're not fighting. I go, get inside, telling Jeff, get inside. And Jeff's like, F you guys. And he's freaking tough.
Right.
So there, I know Jeff's tough and Bruce is tough, and Rob and I don't know what's going to happen. And they're big, tough, big guys.
Yeah.
And Bruce isn't saying no freaking word. So everything breaks up. We go in the bar and I go, Bruce, what were you doing? Why didn't you say something? And he goes, because I was going to knock the guy out to the right, knock the guy out to my left. I was going to hit him right. I was going to go knock him out. Knock the second guy out and then kick the shit out of the third guy. And then you guys would be able to handle the other two. I'm like, no way. Really? He goes, oh yeah. He goes, I had it. I had it perfect. I was going to freaking. Yeah. And he could do it. Like, he's that tough. I've been in a couple with him, not fighting one another, but fighting other guys. Oh my God. It's insane.
I love that.
It's too bad he didn't play in the NHL, because we would have seen it.
I love that. Isn't it the best thing in the world, Rusty? I find it such a rush. You said your buddy got a hole in one. I've had two of them.
Mm-hmm. Brag.
But that's not really that a brag. Everyone's getting hole in ones, but holes in one.
I only have one.
But I bet, Russ, I've been with, I'm not lying, if I've seen in my same group a dozen in my life. Yeah.
Wow.
And I freak out, man, when they do it. Yeah. I just think it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah, it's so good. Especially when you can watch it go in. Totally. Sometimes guys get them and they don't know if they're in or not, because you're below the green, or, you know, it's locked somehow. But this one, we watch it. It hit on the fringe and rolled right towards the hole. And the guys in the group started yelling, like, first it's a good shot. And then they're like, oh my God, it's going towards the hole. And then it's like, it's going in. Yeah. And then the guys behind us, it's another par three on 13 at Victoria Golf Club. And I knew a couple of the players behind, Pete Jall being one of them, who's just a great player and shot actually 28 on the front at Victoria. That's on Friday.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did. He's a great golfer and a longtime friend. And, club champion too at Victoria Golf Club. Anyways, he came running up because he heard us screaming, and they were as excited as, you know, somebody winning the Stanley Cup. It was phenomenal.
It's awesome. So, yeah, it's yeah. awesome.
Good reaction. Good day. Just a little 5-minute argument with my brother.
I'm gonna text Bruce.
Oh God.
Hey Bruce, yeah. Rusty thinks you're a wimp. Just leave that with him. See what yeah. happens next time.
Well, he'd know you're lying.
Yeah, he
would. I don't think he's a
wimp. You never lip him off. On the show today, you know, when we talk about the shows, you know, it's hockey centered, and we've had, you know, unbelievable guests that we've had on over the years and over the months that we've been doing this. And when you talk hockey, you know, Wayne's name comes up. Certainly if I have my way, it does, because without him, I would not, my life would be totally different. He's a good friend of yours, Rusty. And one thing we don't get to talk about too much is what was it like if you were an Oiler when Wayne was 8 years old playing in his first pro season or second pro season? And Ronnie Chipperfield is a friend of mine. I never was here. Ronnie's older than I am when he played with Edmonton. But, you know, it's such a small circle. You know, we started running into each other like 20 plus years ago. And I see him from time to time. And he's one of those guys, like you've always said, Russ, about hockey players. You meet him and I feel like he's a best friend, you know?
Yeah.
But we don't talk about that very often. What was it like? I want to find out when this snot-nosed teenager in Wayne Gretzky walked into a dressing room, an NHL dressing room, Russ. I was with all the hype. Yeah. I know if I was you, maybe you could speak for yourself, but if it was me, I'd be like, okay, everyone calm the F down. Okay. About how good this kid is, but what an unusual situation. Ronnie was the captain of that team. Yeah. When Wayne was there, we never talked to agents very often. I don't think we have yet. We're trying to get some guys on. And we don't often talk to any general managers of hockey teams. Or what was hockey like over in Europe? Rusty, I did you ever consider going to Europe, Rusty? Was there any? I mean, you had such a great NHL career, but
I got a call. So the year I retired, so 98-99, in November of, maybe it was December, I can't remember, November, December of 99, I got a call from Dave King. He was in Helsinki and Esa Tikkanen, and they both were trying to get me to come over and play. And I just, my daughter just started kindergarten, my oldest daughter, and I was enjoying my time, you know, in LA as in the off season, or sorry, post playing. And I said no, and I regret it, because I went and coached at the Spangler Cup, and I talked to all the Canadians that play over there and just what a great life and the kids. And so my wife and I, when we were there at the Spangler Cup, we're kind of looking at each other, like it would have been fun for 2-3 years to live over in Europe and have the kids experience it. Because when we did go to the Spangler Cup, my third child was 5 mm-hmm. at Brooklyn, and she learned how to ski. And so she was skiing every day in Switzerland while we were, while I was coaching.
Of course, she was. Only you. If we're going to ski, we're going to do it in Switzerland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Russ. Yeah. So anyways, one of my regrets is not going over there and playing, but c'est la vie.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, when I say we want to talk to the captain of that team when Wayne was so young, we want to talk to an agent. We want to talk to a general manager. We want to talk to someone who's over in Europe. It sounds like we need 4 or 5 different guys, but Ronnie, you've done it all. We want to welcome from the confines. Looks like you got a night. You're in a beautiful room there. We found you in Vancouver. How are you, Ronnie?
Oh, Jimmy, I'm doing great. Things are really good. I'm living in West Vancouver. I've been out here for 13 years now.
Wow.
And life is great.
Good for you. Good for you, Ronnie. When you hear those, by the way, I can tell you right now that I knew you were a captain, a GM, an agent, like all those jobs that you're in the leadership role, Rusty. Okay. Cause I lined this up with Ronnie a few days ago. Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to do it, Ronnie, at 1 o'clock your time. Okay. 12:45 from the captain. Are you guys running late? What's going on? Okay. Are you guys running late? Hey, Ronnie giving me shit here right away. I said, I can tell this guy's a captain. Ronnie, let's we really appreciate you coming on. I meant every word I said about you, and that you're one of the great guys that I've met thousands over the years. And like I said off the top, Ronnie, introducing you, we've never spoken to anyone who was part of that Oilers squad when Wayne was you were captain in his second year. And like I said, I would have might have had a hard time with that, Ronnie, knowing what was happening here. Talk about those days, Ronnie. What was it like? What did you do? How was it all handled? And what were your thoughts when they said, okay, this kid's going to be part of your team and you're the captain, so make sure you look after him?
Actually, I wasn't the captain the first year Wayne came in. That was the last year of the WHA. Okay. And we started the year and we went to Indianapolis to play them. Wayne was in Indianapolis.
Yep.
And I was injured, so I was sitting in the stands watching the game, and saw him score his first pro goal on a backhand. Yeah. Was really impressed with what I saw just that first game from him. And never thought much about it again. We went home, and about maybe 2 weeks later, Slats calls me in and says, "You know, we got Wayne Gretzky coming in here with Eddie Meehl and Peter Driscoll." And both Peter and Eddie I'd played with before, so I knew them quite well. And, you know, I'd seen Wayne. So I said, wow, you just changed our entire team here.
Right.
That's
we won't tell Eddie that.
Yeah. Eddie's like our mascot. We beat him on the head every once in a while.
That was the start of it. And then the next thing I knew, in they came, and the WHA, it's different than the NHL. You, as a young guy coming in, if you were a first round pick or making money, you really didn't get a lot of love from the veterans, because most of those guys were guys who went through long periods of time not making much money, and so you didn't really get a lot of love from them. But I had learned that, and I made sure that any team I was on, when a young guy came in, he got I looked out over his shoulder and into the room and made sure that he was welcomed in the right way.
I love to hear that. I experienced that when I first started playing in Toronto, and for the rest of my career, I did exactly that with the young guys. And I wasn't a captain or an assistant, but the way I felt, some of the guys treated me was just exactly what you said. And there was always that jealousy factor,
yeah,
of the young guy coming in that era, early 80s.
My first year was a disaster. We had a bunch of old guys there. Most of them had played in the NHL, and we had a terrible team. It wasn't a good team at all. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot of lessons, I had been a captain. I'd been a captain, a three-year captain and junior. So I was, I knew a little bit about welcoming people in and getting them going. But it was a tough, really tough first year for me. And just wanted to make sure when Wayne came in there, a couple of guys come to mind: Cowboy Flett and Ace Bailey.
Right.
Those guys really. They made sure that the older guys were respectful.
Right. Okay. Right. Ace Bailey, of course, right. He lost his life in 9/11, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Him and Cowboy were very, very, very important to Wayne. I think in some way mentors as well to him. Mm-hmm. He would hang with those guys really more than anybody else on the team, right, even though those guys were, quite a bit older and stuff. But, right. Those guys were really good to Wayne.
What was Wayne like, Ronnie? That's unreal. What you did. That's cool that you saw that. What was his demeanor? Was he scared shitless coming in? Was he apprehensive? No. Was he confident?
He was totally confident. but in a modest, respectful way, you know. Exactly how he was brought up, that's how he acted around the room and around the guys. He wasn't he was confident about his game, but very respectful, and went about his business. I actually sat across from him, but only about 6 feet away from him. We sat in the corners adjacent to each other. I got to watch him how he prepared. He'd come in, and the first thing he'd do, he'd come in, take off his stuff, and come over to his stall, crack his toes.
Of course he did.
What? On both feet. On both feet.
Oh my God. Now every kid in Canada is gonna be cracking their toes.
He bend his toes down and then stand up on them. Crack.
Oh Jesus.
Uh-oh.
Oh yeah.
Here's a new one. No one's ever heard this.
I've never heard that. Carry on. So after he cracked his toes.
I can tell you one story about there was Gretz and Cowboy and Ace and myself.
Yep.
We were out, and Gretz wasn't old enough to drink, but he had a couple of beers. And it was right around, it was in December, December 15th or something like that. So anyway, we took Ace home to his wife. Yeah. His wife's name was Kathy. And he said, I want you guys to come in with me. We go, why? You know? He says, well, I just come on in with me. So in we go. And the first thing he gets through the door, Kathy doesn't see that we're there. And she goes, did you get the Christmas tree? Ace goes, no, I didn't get the Christmas tree. So she starts in on him. He goes downstairs. He gets a hacksaw. He's renting a house. There's about a 8 foot tree in the front yard. He saws it down. He drags it in the house, and he says, Kathy, you got your Christmas tree.
Nice.
Oh, those are beauty.
Those are the days, Ronnie, when guys were getting it. And I get it, you know, they got to run cover, right? He wants you to come in. You got to run cover. I get that. I've used that move thousands of times. Those are the days, Ronnie. I don't know if the kids are getting in trouble anymore. You know, I mean, you didn't have social media, but you guys got in a little bit of trouble, right? It was a little more fun, maybe back.
Well, there was, society looked at trouble in a different way back then than it does now. And you know, the things that that we did back then, they just it wouldn't work today. You know, it wouldn't work in today's society, and it would be looked at much differently than it was back then. So as far as good times, we had lots of them, but I think these guys have to, with the social media and everything, they can't be, there's not much they can do.
When you say that, do you mean it's too bad we can't get in trouble, or it's a good thing?
Well, good times are fun. And I am glad I came through the era I did.
Yeah.
And so I'll just answer it that way. I would have preferred coming through the era that I did, even though we didn't make the big money, but we really did have some great times.
Yeah, cool.
That's awesome. Ace was what a great guy. I got to know Ace through Wayne. And the first time I met him, I was going to stay at our friend Randy Morton, the hotel manager, president, now co-CEO of Foley Entertainment Group. He was running a hotel, the Beverly Wilshire, the Four Seasons, and he said to me, why don't you bring Paris down before training camp? You can stay in the Pretty Woman suite, the suite they filmed the in. And it was a crazy, crazy suite, and somebody had paid for four nights and left in three. So Paris and I were on our way. Gretz called and said, hey, Ace is cooking dinner. Why don't you guys come over? And he was telling stories. I couldn't get enough of the storytelling. We didn't get to the hotel till about 1 o'clock in the morning. slept there, got up in the morning, went back to the house. Paris is like, well, that wasn't kind of what I was imagining, but that Ace Bailey sure is a nice guy and the food was great. And that's how I met Ace. And then I got to know him better and better over the years and met his wife and son and just a horrific when I saw his name come across the ticker when all the people who died in the plane crashes and his name was on the ticker below the whatever television I was watching at the time, whatever they were covering the 9/11 crashes. And he was one of the first names, I guess, because of Ace. Alphabetical order. But wow, some great, great stories. Great guy. But you're right. Gretz loved him.
No, he's a great guy. I got some great stories about Ace. I mean, he was a character, man. He in the true sense of a character.
Right.
Yeah.
You get to tell one, Ronnie. Go ahead. Let's
want one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. One day we're playing in Hartford.
Yeah.
This was Wayne was there, so I think it was the last year of the WHA. And Stevie Carlson has a baby. And so everyone got, we didn't have a game the next day. Everyone got absolutely smashed. So we come the next day to practice, right. And it starts out with B.J. McDonald's in the corner passing pucks out.
Great names, yeah.
And Al Hamilton hits him in the chest. He missed the net by he hit him right in the chest. B.J. was passing pucks in the corner. So Slats realizes what's going on. And he starts
everyone's
skating
hung over.
Us.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
oh, they're still drunk.
Yeah. He starts skating us. And then he says to Ace, Ace, you look terrible out here today. He said, Slats, will you shut up? Can't you see I'm trying to practice?
he's playing in Boston. And he was at the end of the bench in the 70s and 80s. We had four lines, but the fourth line barely played. I mean, I was on the fourth line in Toronto and there was, maybe a shift, a period sometimes. And the Ace isn't playing. They're down 3-0. There's 5 minutes left. He hasn't played a shift. I think he's a rookie early in his career. And Harry Sinden with 5 minutes left says, Ace, get out there next shift. He hasn't played a shift in the entire game.
Right.
And he's got his skates untied. Cause when you were on the bench, you'd always untie your skates, loosen them up. Cause those leather skates hurt like hell when they're tight and you didn't skate. So he'd untied his skates. They're really loose. And so he's panicking, trying to tie his skates. And he looks up at Harry Sinden and he goes, do you want me to win it or tie it? And Harry Sinden sent him to the minors the next day.
Fuck, I love that.
That night, sorry, Jim.
Carry on.
At Wayne's, he told story after story after story. And it was just, I couldn't believe the stories he was telling me like that, like as a rookie to look up at your coach and say that.
Well,
who does that? But that
only Ace could get away with that. Only a guy like with his personality and his love for life. We'll get forgiven for saying stuff like that.
Right. And I think we've talked about the story before. Gretz told me, I think he was rooming with Ace and they were kind of late. There was a curfew. They snuck into their room and Gretz said the first move, okay, the black belt move right away is drop your freaking gear and get into your underwear, right? In case the door knocks, it's the coach and so you don't have your shit on, right? But Ace was sort of lagging behind, and then there was a pound at the door, and Ace had on like the three-piece suit, the tweed coat, the scarf, and everything. And they're going, "Oh no!" And Ace jumps into bed, okay, and pulls all the covers up right to his neck. Right, he's got all this shit on, and it slats. He walks in, and he sits on the end of the bed, And he's going, "So how was the night, boys?" "Oh, it's good. Yeah. We got back early. We're just sitting around shooting the shit." And so that's what's up with Ace here. What are you doing, Ace? Because I got a temperature, right? I think I got the flu coming on or something, and I want to make sure I can play tomorrow. And Slats is onto it right away. Okay. You can see you can see the toes of his shoes hanging out the end of the bed, right? And Slats says, well, what you gotta do? Now there's sweat coming down Ace's forehead, right? He's got all this shit on. He feels like it's a volcano underneath the bedspread. And Slats runs over to the thermostat in the room and goes, well, to burn off a fever, you got to crank the temperature, right? And the heater was right beside Ace. Anyway, that was Ace Bailey story. And then he just threw the shit off. He goes, okay, Slats, I was late. Anyone who talks about the Oilers, Ronnie, and we want to ask you about your days in Europe and Italy and all the other stuff that you've done. By the way, did Wikipedia screw this up, or did I read this right? You got 90 goals when you played for Brandon? 9-0?
Yeah, my last year junior, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
Did you play with Billy D?
I played just after him.
Just after, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I taught him in hockey school, actually. So he was 4 years younger than me, I think. Or 5 years younger.
Who's Billy D?
Billy Derlego.
Yeah, okay. I knew him well, Billy. He was a talent, man.
Could he score?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah. Ronnie did all right at 90. Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, he got more than that.
Holy God. Yeah.
He used to get, Billy Derlego would get 40 goals almost every year. And I'm like, Billy, why don't you try and get 50? He goes, because if I get 50, they're going to want 60. I can score 40 in my sleep. And it was true. He could score 40, no problem.
Ronnie, well, one of the cool things that all those guys who did play for the Oilers and one of the most iconic hockey clubs ever, and we're talking about Wayne, they'll often bring up this unbelievable relationship Wayne had with Joey Moss. You know, he passed away over the last several months. It's probably over a year now, maybe 2 years. But so many guys had so many great stories about Joey. And you had nudged me before you came on and said, you got to let me tell a great story about Wayne and Joey.
Yeah, so this would have been in July of 88, I think.
Yep.
So it's the Saturday morning, and I get a call from Wayne about early in the morning, about 8 o'clock, and he says, "Listen, what are you doing this morning?" I say, "Well, no, nothing." He says, "You want to meet me at the Edmonton Country Club? I want to let's play golf." So I automatically thought, okay, he's got Bill Comrie or the Harvey sisters or somebody. Sure. And he's got a money game and he wants me to play with him.
Yeah.
So I say, I better get out there and hit some putts and chips and wait for him. So I don't know if you know it, Jimmy.
I do. Sure. I was a member there. Yeah. Yeah. I know that.
So the putting green, you can see the cars drive in. They have to go right by you.
Yeah.
So I'm on the putting green. I see Wayne come in, and he's got somebody in the car with him. But holy shit, I could just see the top of their head. And I go, "Oh, that must be Glennie. You know, maybe Glenn. He brought Glenn with him. I don't know." So anyway, he goes over to the parking lot, comes in, and I see him walking over, and he's got Joey with him.
Right.
So I go, okay. So we get on the course. We get on the cart. Gretz is driving. I'm in the passenger seat, and Joey's riding shotgun on the middle.
Right.
And so we get out first, but the third hole, he says, "Okay, Joey, that's my ball over there. Will you drive me to it?"
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
By the way, Joey Moss, of course, if you've been living in a cave, Joey was Vicky Moss's, Wayne's first girlfriend here, a brother, and he had Down syndrome. And of course he worked for so many years in the locker room. So go ahead, Ron.
So Joey, instead of going straight over to the ball, would do a complete turn the other way and then go over to the ball.
Right.
So we tried this again on the fifth hole and on the ninth hole. And finally we get to the second last hole, the 17th hole.
Yeah.
And it's going to be the last chance. He says, "Joey, this is the last chance. Can you please drive straight over to that ball?" Joey looks over at me and he looks over at Wayne. He says, "Get out of the seat." He gets over there, and sure enough, straight over to the ball.
uh, Cool, man. God. What's Ronnie? So after your career, you went over to Europe. You stayed there a long, long time over there, and you talk about that. Did you start playing over there, Ronnie, or did you go right into management when you were there and coaching?
What happened was when I left the NHL, I had two more years on a one-way ticket in the NHL, and I wasn't happy. I was in Quebec,
right.
And they had just signed Peter Stastny, and Dale Hunter was a rookie. I was a centerman looking for a job, and Robbie Fatorik was the captain, mm-hmm. and they had Serge Bernier, who was the hero of Quebec. So they had four centermen there. I was the fifth centerman. They liked me because I could have fit in on the first line, the second line, the third line, or the fourth line. I could do each one of those jobs if they needed me. Mm-hmm. I asked them to trade me. They wouldn't. They said they wouldn't. So I said, if you don't trade me, I'm going to go to Europe. So I got an agent, and I got a team in Italy to pay me the same amount of money. So I said, well, yeah, I'm going. I'll mm-hmm. go for a year and I'll come back. And I went for a year, and I really enjoyed it. I thought at the end of the year, I'll go back, I think. But went out for lunch with the owner, and he said, listen, we're willing to up things here for you. So we did a contract that day, and I stayed for 23 years.
Holy smokes.
What was it like, Ronnie, over there? Like, you know, you hear today, speaking of Gretz, you know, he's always said, go over there, go play in that KHL, and then talk to me in 6 months, you know, where you haven't been paid. You hate the freaking food. You comment, you know, there's no heat in your apartment. The NHL is the greatest game. But what was it like for you back in those days over there? We don't talk to many, too many guys who played in Europe.
So I went over there, and I went to the team that had the most talent in the league. And they had lost the championship the last 2 years,
right,
to a team that wasn't as good, but they were better defensively and more disciplined. So anyway, I went over to this team, and they basically said, hey, your job is, I don't care how you do it, but we got to win this year.
Right.
So we won. I think we lost two games all year, but we easily won the league. And I absolutely loved it. It rejuvenated my enthusiasm to play again. Mm-hmm. It was the greatest experience for me. I can't say enough about it. It was, first of all, I wasn't in Russia. I was in Italy, which is a beautiful place to live. And I made a commitment to learn the language, and I learned how to read and write and speak.
Oh, shit. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. We still speak. I married an Italian. We still speak Italian at home here because it was my daughter and my wife's first language. So we still speak an Italian here at home.
Fire away. Let's hear some.
Talk about how good the Suspendables is the best of podcast.
Okay. The Suspendables, the Tanto Più Buono, come up podcast, the Tutti D'Altro podcast, the Tutti Del Mondo. Assolutamente la podcast più bello al mondo.
Più bello mondo.
Beautiful.
23 years, man. You never hear that. You never hear of a North American guy staying over there that long.
What happened was I played 3 years, and my third year I hurt my back, and I was going home. And I got home in the summer. The guy, the owner, phoned me up, and he said, "Listen, would you come and coach for a year?" And I said, "No, I don't want to do that." And a week later, he calls me back. "Can I change your mind?" I said, "Well, not really." He said, "Well, listen, I want you to fly over here. And I want you to sit down at the table with me, and we can discuss it." And so I did, and he talked me into going.
Right.
So I started coaching. I coached for 6 years. And I'll just tell you a couple of guys that played for me over there, because Russ will know these guys. When I was coaching, I had Cliff Ronning played for me.
Oh, Cliffy.
when he was 23 years old, took him out of the out of St. Mm-hmm. Louis over there for a year. In he played for me, and he was the best player I ever coached over there.
Wow.
He's a puny guy, right? He was a smallie.
He's really good.
Huge hurt.
Yeah.
Competes. Great player.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I coached Kent Nielsen. Wow. I brought him in the year after he won the cup with the Oilers. So I brought him in that year. He came straight from winning the Stanley Cup to Italy. But he was, he was magic over there.
What a talent.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I had Ken Yaremchuk. Who else did I coach? John Chabot.
Wow.
Yeah. He played for me. Yeah. And then those are the guys I coached. And then after 5 years of coaching, I started managing. Yikes. And I worked in Milan. My first managing job was in Milan. And who did I have over there? I was in Milan. I had Mark Johnson from Bob Johnson's kid from the gold medal. Mm-hmm. And Mark Pavlich, wow. Reed Larson,
wow.
Kevin Lavelli. Those guys played for me when I was managing that team.
Right. So, you know, we got a sharp producer here. He must be drinking. See, he often drinks on the job, right? Like Russ does, like I used to. He's saying here, Chipper. By the way, another very imaginative name, nickname for an NHL player. How they thought of Chipper out of Chipperfield? I don't know. Quartz out of Quartz. No. In Ron Chipperfield's first two full seasons playing in Italy, he averaged over 4 points a game.
Oh, my God.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No wonder you wanted to stay there. You must have been a superstar.
That was probably my best hockey I ever played because I was, 29, 30.
Yeah, still young.
Yeah, and was in good shape. I had really good years over there. Enjoyed it.
You were the GM. So GMs, just by the nature of the title of the agent, they have to hate the agents, right? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
I know more about hockey for a guy who's never played than anyone. And I've never.
I'd argue that.
And you ended up being an agent, Ronnie. So we want to hear a little bit about being the GM and then the agency. Cause most of the times I got to admit, if you bring up an agent's name around a GM who had to deal with the guy, they roll their eyes and go, fuck, he prevented the deal from being done and all sorts of shit. Why did you possibly, after being a general manager, ever want to go into the agency business? Because you owned your own, right? Didn't you start your own agency?
Yes, I did. But here's why, Jimmy. It was 1996.
Yep.
And my daughter was born, and I wanted to get her educated in English. So I knew I had to make a move back home. So I said, well, you've been negotiating with these general managers. And I love negotiation. I would take notes on it, and mm-hmm. I tried to learn the game as well as I could. And then I made a decision. I said, I'm going to go the other side of the table and negotiate with the managers for the players. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And believe it or not, in our first year, we were the biggest agency in Europe.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. We grew that thing so quickly.
Why? Why did it grow so fast?
Well, because first of all, the agents that were working were not traveling and seeing their players and helping them out. Mm-hmm. So we put in a strategy to travel and to see all our players play and to have lunch with them and, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it the word just took off that these guys are are doing things differently, and they are the new breed of agent, I guess, that was moving into the game. And so we just that's incredible. Thing just took off. Yeah. I mean, and then we held that number one spot for all 20 years, like, you know,
unreal.
Maybe a double as big as anybody else for probably most of that time.
Wow. Cool.
And, my partner's still running the agency, and I think he told me they did 217 players last year.
Jeez. That's like Larry Kelly big.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he sell out your share in it, or?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So he bought you out.
Yeah.
You know, a similar story to that is Jeff Jackson. I played with Jeff in Toronto. He was second pick. We were roommates. He played in the NHL. He became a lawyer after, worked in the entertainment industry, and then was the assistant GM to Ferguson in Toronto, and then started an agency, and now he's one of the top agents in the NHL. He's got two of the best players, McDavid and Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
And a bunch more. But when he and I talked, I said, you're going to have the best story for parents, because you were a player. You played in the minors. You played in the NHL. You were injured. Now you're educated. You're working outside the game. And then you're back in the game. Now you're representing. And I go, you just can lay it out for families, because he's dealing with their parents and then the player. Because when you first start in his position, he started with kids that hadn't made it to the NHL yet. And so he grew from the ground up. And I said, you're going to have these parents eating out of the palm of your hands, because you can actually sit across the table and tell them the truth versus some lawyer who's never played the game or been in a locker room. And so he's Jeff Jackson and Dave Gagne have grown that business to one of the top agencies in the NHL.
No, I mean, I've dealt with Jeff before. Yeah. He's top notch for sure.
Yeah. Great guy. So you probably credit a lot of your experiences from being a player, having an agent, then being a coach and a manager, dealing with the agents, and used all those things to your credit. Like just that one thing you said, visiting the players.
Yeah.
One of the things that you and I would have been pissed off about when we were playing is not having that contact with the guy you were paying, the agent.
Exactly. I mean, the first year I was working as an agent, I got home from a golf and I had a message on my, there was no email, or it was all voicemail. It was all voicemail. Message
on my smoke signals, Ronnie, back then, right? You're fucking old, Ronnie. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, this guy says, you didn't get back to me. So I called him up and I said, sorry, I was out, had a golf game today. And he says, well, I don't want to hear that. and you know what? I never played golf for 20 years again.
Wow.
Come on.
Wow.
Not once.
Wow.
I never played one game of golf after 20 years again. There's a lot of responsibility in finding employment for a young guy and his family.
Yeah.
And you know, he's right.
Yeah.
He didn't want to hear that. I'm out the golf course. Like what's my priority, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in July and August, when these guys are out of work, they didn't want to hear that.
Yeah,
right. You know, so honest to God, I did not play one. I never, in fact, I love golf so much, I wouldn't even pick up a club.
Wow. Because you're a fanatic golfer now.
Yeah.
I absolutely love what you just said, you know, about the agent. I'm sure you do too, Russ, right? That there's a lot of responsibility looking after a guy and his family.
I tell parents, I go, the most important thing an agent does isn't negotiating the contract. It's when your kid is going to need help, meaning he got cut and he doesn't know why. He's going to get traded. You're going to need a good agent when the times are tough, not when he's sitting across the table. And of course, the negotiating part is important. But when the shit hits the fan is when you really need a powerful, good, solid agent. And usually when the shit hits the fan, and you, not usually, but when you hear guys complain, it's because you know, they need you now. They need a job or they need to be traded and they can't get a hold of the agent. And the agent's like, oh my God, he's getting sent to the minors. I don't want to talk to him.
So. I mean, my friends, like Dougie Hicks, he called me for 3 years to play.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, he said, come on, are you sure you're not going to play?
How old were you when you retired?
I was, I hurt my back. I was 31.
31. So you're still young then.
Ronnie, what's the, by the way, you passed the test, Ronnie, eh? Because if our guests are no good, we flick them after about 15 minutes, right? If they're shitty. Okay. We guess we go, oh my God. Yeah. We're having a technical problem. See you later. Right.
And
we
then they call us and say, why, what happened to my part on the show? The computer broke and we lost the tape.
Or if it was Jeff, you know, he go, well, you're just shitty. So you've passed the test, Ronnie. What's Ronnie? I'm interested in this agency thing. I'll tell you a hilarious 5-second story. Yeah. I got when I was in radio, I got Larry Kelly. He was a friend of my dad's, and I phoned him up to do my contract. You know, high rolling it. I said I need an agent. Okay. I was spreading my feathers. I phoned him. He said, sure, I'll do that for you. And then I said, okay, do this, do that, right? And he goes, oh, so you're an agent now, are you? Right? I went, and he says, dial it back there, Scooter. Okay, just dial it back. I said, okay. But see, Larry, I was living in Ottawa doing this show. I said, hey, Larry, by the way, get them to toss in a membership, okay, at the Ottawa Hunt Club. Okay, and the phone went dead. And then I phoned back and said, we got disconnected. He said, no, we didn't. Go get another agent. You fucking wannabe. So that was my experience. What's the toughest part of it, Ronnie? I mean, there's so many success stories, I'm sure, but I would never want to be an agent. And I always, it's funny because I always thought Russ would be a really good agent. Russ is, you've spent your whole life, Russ, negotiating, you know, in your real estate stuff and for your charity and stuff where you've got to grind out deals. But you never did, Rusty. And I, what's the hardest part about it? And why did you, first of all, Rusty, why did you never want to be an agent after?
I never really thought about it. Jeff Jackson wanted me to be his partner and he just said, well, you know, we got to go to the rink and meet parents. And I was like, I just coached minor hockey for 6 years and dealt with parents. I don't want to do that. So, I would have rather dealt with players that had already, you know, been in the league and helped them, but I just wasn't something I really ever considered.
Right. Is that one of the tough things, Ronnie, or what is the toughest thing about being an agent?
The toughest thing is having a kid you really like and not being able to find him the job that he deserves. You know, that was always the toughest thing for me is September coming around and you got a kid that's been with you for a few years and, you know, maybe not his fault, but he hasn't had a great year. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it dries up on him and you got to tell him that, you know, maybe it's time to do something else or.
That sucks.
Yeah. That sucks. Yeah. Ronnie, this has been great, man. This has been fantastic. Are you still a big hockey fan? Are you watching hockey? Do you like the game? I mean, it's slightly different from when you played back in the day. But what are your thoughts on the game today?
No, I watch it. You know, I get that NHL package, and I watch the Oilers predominantly. I have watched the Canucks a lot. I didn't watch them a lot last year. Mm-hmm. But I probably go back and see if I like their team better this year. But yeah, I'm, you know, that Canadian division was really fun last year. It was, you know, those games were all great. I'm an Oilers fan. You know, I love watching McDavid. You get something new every night from that kid. And, you know, he can almost bring me out of my chair.
Right.
some nights.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff he does.
Well, then talk to him and tell him you'd like to be brought out of your chair with a Stanley Cup. Okay, Ronnie, this is okay. It's not a tall order, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Chipper, thanks a million for this, man. What's your handicap now? You're playing golf 4 or 5 times a week. What are you knocking the ball?
Oh, no, I'm still 2 years into it, Jimmy. So for example, I shot 40 yesterday, just played 9.
Yeah.
So
strong. That's good.
That'll give you an idea.
We're getting set up here, Russ, because I said, when I go out there, I'm going to go see my brother. He's in Victoria. You got a daughter in law school. She'll be an agent. And Russ is in Victoria.
Come on over, you guys. We'll play Victoria Golf Club.
Let's do it.
My daughter's name is Allie as well, Russ. Oh,
nice. How old is she?
She's 25.
Oh, wow. Same age as my son.
We just bought her a condo there in that Hudson One. In that 25-story condo there in Victoria.
Yeah.
Nice. So she starts next week or 10 days from now at law school there. So she's looking forward to it.
Can I be your son, Ronnie? Can I be your son? Okay, boys, great show. Thanks a million, Ronnie. Really appreciate
this. Thanks, you guys, for having me. I really enjoyed it. And I'll be listening, so keep me laughing.
Yeah, it's a big day for you. Let's all go away and crack our toes. Let's go do that, okay? Let's get to the great success. Thanks a million. We'll talk to you later, Ronnie.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.